other stuff rather than, well, I'll do that. And I'll look at that shirt or whatever. But yeah, it's a big adjustment. I think it's part, part is just that, even though it sounds funny, but saying goodbye to your loved ones. And I don't, I'm not trying to make things all important, but, and I'm not talking about the value.
Kathy?
Say something, like I had a big talk with my daughter-in-law, because they had used the dining room table that had come from her parents. And then it no longer fit in their house, so they were getting rid of the dining room table simply in the same place. Then. Whereas I'd had this dining room table for years and years.
With a lot of memories.
And it's the memories. Yeah. It's all the people that sat around.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
The Christmas around.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's the fact that there's still a square on it where my son did his drawing for his science project on my table.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying. Yes.
And we were talking about how a dining room table really more than any other piece of furniture in the is the hardest thing to do.
Really?
It's just such a kind of play.
Wow. That's really good.
Yeah.
How are you doing, Jim?
It's so funny.
And the only thing you have left from the past is your shoulder coat. Because everything in your life has changed. And so he said, hang on to this. Because it may be your only touch.
Oh, she got it. Thank you.
Meeting of the Commission on Aging will come to order. We've all had an opportunity to review the agenda. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So I approve.
Second. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? We've all reviewed the minutes from the August 16th meeting. Unless there are changes, and I have a motion for approval of the August 16th meeting minutes.
I move.
Is there a second?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? The minutes for August 16th are approved. For the chair report tonight, I did meet recently with the American Association of Retired People, Washington State. Kathy McCall is the advocacy director, and this is a new position. And as she told me, AARP is trying to increase its visibility in the states. She is headquartered, Kathy McCall is headquartered in Seattle, and they were down here a couple days just to begin establishing a relationship with some of the area businesses and some of the organizations in Clark County. I was interested to hear a little bit about their aging readiness plan. I didn't compare it to ours, but I think ours would serve pretty well with them as well. There's our health care, long-term care, protections for vulnerable adults, financial security and retirement readiness, housing and transportation. So I invited Kathy to come back to one of our meetings and speak to us, so we could learn more about what she's doing. So we're hoping to hear back from her. She also is aware of our housing series, found that very interesting, and is aware of our housing summit. So hope to be hearing from her again in the future. Allie, do you have a vice chair report?
Only to say that the supportive services topics that we're doing for 2017, we're continuing to move forward with those and working with our community partners. And yeah, it'll be an exciting new speaker series coming 2017.
So, anything for COVID health?
No, no report.
Linda O'Leary is not here, so there's no communication report. Chuck, do you have a housing update?
Yeah, this last week in the newspaper was a article on a new seniors development that's just off of Fort Plain, Isabella Courts. And this is one that I personally was involved in with the looking at accessibility for it. And without a doubt, it will be a very, very nice accessible facility for Vancouver. I think that's it.
Okay. So you were aware of the project and it was built, is that what you said?
Yes. I was invited to participate with the planners through the planning process of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And And so I'm looking forward to us being invited to the opening ceremonies and all of that kind of stuff. And so we'll have a little part and all of that.
Yeah. Okay, good. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to say before? Tonight we have our eighth speaker in our housing series, where the primary emphasis has been on housing for people 60 and over. Each speaker has addressed a different aspect, including factors to consider when moving, financing options, and multiple dimensions of what it means to age in place. After our speaker, members of the Commission on Aging will ask questions of him, and then we will invite the audience to ask questions. Your questions are important to us because they have an influence on the policy recommendations we will be making to the Clark County Councilors in our joint meeting with them in January. And in February, Clark County is hosting a housing summit where our report will be discussed with policymakers and major players in the housing industry. Tonight, our speaker is Aaron Marvin. Aaron is Vice President of the Clark County Builders Association and owner of ACT Builders. Tonight, we have asked him to primarily discuss guidelines on selecting a contractor for remodeling and, to a lesser extent, guidelines for a new home. Welcome.
Hey, thank you guys so much. I'm really, really happy to be here this evening and to share with you about a couple of things that I'm fairly passionate about. First off, hello. Isn't that a cool picture? I took that myself. It's artsy. My name is Aaron Martin. I live here in North Vancouver. I graduated high school in 2000, which is getting further and further away all the time. I have a business and social science degree, and I'm minored in economics. I currently have my CAP certification, which is the Certified Aging in Place Specialist. I have the CGB, which is a Certified Green Builder. A CGP, which is Certified Graduate Builder, a Certified Green Professional. I'm almost a Certified Graduate Remodeler, and I will soon be a Certified Graduate Master Builder. So, all of that fun stuff to say that I've taken more classes after I got out of school. I'm currently the Vice President of the BIA. I'm the Chair of the Remodelers of Clark County, which is one of the things that I'm proudest of and the things we've been doing. I'm a state chair and a national director within the larger associations. One of my proudest accomplishments is I'm the head coach of the Rockstars and the Orange Lightning soccer teams. Those are 4.5 to 5 and 5 to 6 soccer teams in the Vancouver Parks and Rec. I've been married for 10 years and I have 2 sons. Those are my boys, the reason I get out of bed every morning and go to work. And that's the whole family there at the beach. We go on vacation once a year, sometimes more. Well, I'm qualified, as I said, I have CAPS. I'm a Certified Aging in Place Specialist. I've been in the remodeling industry for my entire life. My dad is a contractor and co-owner in the business with me. And I'm the co-owner of ACT Builders since 2004. I've completed dozens of projects focused on aging and accessibility. My family members are confined to wheelchairs. I have a couple of people that we are in our family. But most of all, I've spent my time in a wheelchair myself. My senior year of high school, I had surgery on both of my feet right after I had broken my leg. So I spent 6 months in a wheelchair four of those ones have a full leg cast, which adds an extra 18 inches on the front of you, so I really know about accessibility issues. I had to leave my high school at lunch to use the restroom, and I couldn't get into most cars and other things like that. So it's really something that I'm passionate about and see the issue lying. I want to introduce you to Dorothy. Dorothy's my grandma. She has creeping neuropathy, post-polio. Her kidneys don't function all the way. She has problems with her liver. She's had a tumor off of her spine. They had to amputate one leg, and the other one's barely holding on, and she's in a wheelchair full-time. She's a very independent woman, but with that being said, she still lives in a facility that has care available to her. A lot of times I look at it and go, well, my grandma comes over to my home, I'm thankful that I have a ramp that I can get her in. If we go other places and there's one step, it is a bear to get my grandma into the house. A lot of times during the summer, we'll have parties at my brother's homes, and she gets to spend the whole time in the backyard. Thankfully, that's where the party's at, but it's just easier to wheel her around. So she's a reason why, you know, a lot of this matters to me. Also the realization that in her place, if there was to be a fire and a 2x4 were to fall across her door, that could be the end of my grandma. What is aging in place? Aging in place is the ability to remain in one's home safely, independently, and comfortable, regardless of age. We want to make sure that you can, you know, access the space that you're in. We want to make your house a home for your lifetime. And then, ideally, you're using low-maintenance, affordable materials. It's also known as, well, kind of known as these other terms, universal design, barrier-free, accessible design, and ADA. They all kind of tie into one another, but they're all very different in the way that they function. Some are regulatory issues, some are accessibility issues, where others are just comfortable, you know, more comfortable ways to live. And so even though they all kind of get thrown around as the same thing, there is a very different approach to each one of these topics. One of the ways to build, and what we've started doing, especially in our custom homes, when we're building ground up, is we recess the floor joists, we pocket the floor joists, we get that house as low to the ground as possible. This home here is one we've just completed. You can see that we've ramped that entry straight up. There is a true barrier-free. We did not use an ADA threshold in this home, so there's about 3/4 inch lip in there instead of the smaller one, but that was by the homeowner's request, so if they hose off, something like that. It makes it a more comfortable space. All of your guests can get in and access. Bathrooms, we started doing vacuum in all bathrooms. It doesn't matter what it is, it's cheap, we have the leftover materials, we throw it in. Whether you need grab bars or not, they're there. This particular bathroom here, you can see there's grab bars on both sides. And we worked with the homeowners to make sure that they were in a position to where they could shower safely. This is another bathroom with a barrier-free roll-in threshold. So we've recessed the floor, and we're doing this more and more in our custom homes, especially. Remodels, it becomes a little more problematic, and we really talk through the benefits of it and if it'll work for the homeowners. But it gives you the ability to roll into the shower space and roll out. Fixing to Stay, it's an AARP study that talks about how 74% of older homeowners prefer to age in place. They don't want to leave. People 50 and older said that their homes would not meet their needs if they grew older in the space and had needs that would require them to access the home in a different manner. Older consumers want to have a means of identifying professionals that they can trust. You know, everybody knows that contractors, you know, don't always have the best reputation. The professionals need to be reliable, honest, and are trained in the proper skill sets to address the issues and modify the homes for the clients. So what is CAPS? CAPS stands for Certified Aging in Place Specialist. I've mentioned that a couple of times. This means that we've been trained in the unique needs of the older adult population, aging in place home modifications and what those look like, correct installation of assistive devices, solutions to common barriers, and common remodeling projects. Just because somebody has the CAPS doesn't mean that they know everything, though. You know, you really are going to want to, it's a good way to identify that first step, and then you're going to want to really have that conversation and those interviews beyond that to ensure that they get what your needs are and can address them safely and appropriately. Uh, CAPS is a reliable way to identify professionals to modify your home. Developed and administered by the National Association of Home Builders, so it has a national backing. And it's a great starting point to start your project. I'd like to introduce you to Dawn. Dawn is basically my surrogate mom here in the Northwest. She took me under her wing and invited me into her home when I was in college, a long way from my family. Donna, over the past, I've known Donna for a long time. And most of the time she's been in a wheelchair, so I guess about 15 years now. She's been confined to a wheelchair. Donna is also probably about 75% bedridden at this point. Terry, her husband, is their full-time caregiver. But their passions in life are their friends, their family, and HGTV. Donna watches HGTV 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So when it came to remodeling her space, she needed to be able to access it, but it really, 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 really had to look good. This is Donna's bathroom that we worked with her on designing. Donna chose to go with a tub for a couple of reasons. Her husband Terry loves soaking, and so she's such a generous woman and kind woman, she wanted Terry to have space. The second reason is that she knows that she has to transfer to shower anyway. She transfers from a wheelchair to a shower chair or from a wheelchair to a bench. And so she was willing to put a bench in there. They were moving from a home that had a tub, she loved it, it was great. We worked with her on positioning of towel bar, or not towel bars, of the hand bars, excuse me. They were the first clients I had that actually helped me find decorative grab bars. Up until that point, they were very, very difficult to find. It took months and months, and we had to order them from the East Coast. Now they're much more readily available. Back in the time, it was very important that they did not have that typical stainless steel grab bar. The mirror on the wall can be positioned to hit down at any angle that she may be sitting at, so it pivots. Even though it's got that nice trendy look, and if you go to the Parade of Homes this year, one of the houses has a mirror like that. But this was put in this bathroom so that she could access it. The lights are positioned and can move, not only for the looks, but so that we could adjust the lighting appropriately so Donna could see herself. The cabinet was designed by Dawn so that the doors could open. They don't recess back in because she didn't want to have that look, but they open with space for her to wheel up and get to the front of the vanity there. So all of these items were very important to Donna. It looked like the normal home, the home that she always dreamed of, but she could access it. The other spaces, we opened things up. We put hardwood floors throughout the entire space so that it's easy to roll on. We eliminated any barriers that would require to go up and over, and just opened the entire space. The kitchen, we created a functional space within the kitchen. The top one, let's see, is there a laser pointer here? Oh, there we go. Up here, we built in a sink. We call that Donna's sink. Everybody's like, oh, how cute, it's for grandkids. Well, no, Donna wanted to be able to help Terry in the kitchen. And so she, in her last home, we had built a small table height with a little prep sink in it. And she loved it. Had so many compliments on it, everybody loved it so much. And she used it so well that in her new home, when we did it again, she had to have the space again off to the side. In the kitchen, this spot right there is Dawn's pantry and microwave. So the small door there has a microwave in it. Again, everything's accessible at the height that Dawn can get to it, but it needed to be behind doors because she didn't want to look at it all the time. She wanted her kitchen to look, act, and feel normal, but function for her in a wheelchair. The pantry also has the lower space that's full of roll-out shelves, and that's where all of the food that Dawn would normally get to on her own is placed so that she has access to it. So a lot of people have talked about getting these things put into the code. I would venture to say that that is a really bad idea. This morning, I actually presented before the Senate Committee, Financial Committee on Affordable Housing, and we talked about all the barriers to affordable housing. The code is one of the biggest barriers to that, and it's not a practical way to implement something, in my opinion, and the opinion of the Building Industry Association. There's a couple of problems with it. One, it's supposed to be for life safety, and it already covers those issues in great detail. Accessibility is in there, from ramps to stairways to the way that we have to live. Remodeling challenges. If the code comes into play and says that we have to do something a certain way and we go to remodel that space, it is no longer going to be an affordable remodel. if we have to move every outlet to a different position, if we have to open hallways and reconfigure the entire layout of a home, it doesn't always work. Historic preservation. Sometimes old houses, they weren't designed with accessibility in mind, but they have that charm and that feel that people want to preserve, and the historic value of it is still there. Consumer preferences. We've had customers, we have a customer right now, that they absolutely, positively will not waver from the fact that they have to have a step up into their front door, because they are convinced that someday it's going to rain hard enough for water to come down and it would flood the house. It's their preference, it's their home, and we'll give them a step up into their front door, where they're going to get a ramped entry through their garage, but they'll have to step up at the front door. Additional expense. You know, a lot of these things are small ticket items, but when you add them up, they get expensive. And then the last item, as I mentioned, is affordable housing. For me, I think that it's most important to educate instead of try to legislate. Pushing it through legislature doesn't change the way that people view it and the way that they address the situation there. This is kind of a real quick cost breakdown of what it is. So we got permits and fees is 7%, lot price is 25%, builder cost is 60%. So if we increase builder cost for any of those items, that overall median house price would raise. And as of right now, 25% of an overall house value is based in fees and regulatory expenses. And so if we add any more regulatory expenses, it'll continue to escalate there. What should be done with the change in thinking? I started to address this a little bit. It should be done through consumer demands. And as we see now, the room's a full room, and it's obviously that there's interest in the community in accessibility. And I think that if we have an outcry from the community that has been educated in why we want to create an accessible home from the get-go, it's going to be way better. And then we need to educate on the benefits and the reasons that a change could cause. We also need to be realistic about the fact that certain housing is never going to be an accessible home for somebody that has a need of an accessible space. Entry-level housing with today are on small lots, narrow spaces. They have a living room, great room on the main floor, and all the bedrooms upstairs. They've made no provision to get ramps up. They've made no provision to get elevators, escalators, lifts, anything like that. And the sad reality is that if you were in a position where you needed to have an accessible bathroom or bedroom on a main floor, it would be very cost prohibitive, and at that point you're looking to move. Same thing with a lot of the 1980s, 1990s, the split entry style homes. There's just nothing you're going to be able to do with that is reasonable within a cost structure to make that happen. All right, now the nuts and bolts of how to hire a contractor. So, some of this is a little tongue-in-cheek in the way that I went about it, but it all stands in the same thing. So the typical ways that people go about hiring a contractor, I call the first one duck, duck, goose, where you get them all in a group, and you kind of wait for one to chase you and catch you, and you go, oh, you got me. All right, you can have a good job. The second one is the caveman way, where you let somebody just kind of club you over the head. They show up, they give you a price, and they call you, and they call you, and they call you. They call you, finally, you're like, okay, fine. If I let you do this, will you leave me alone? With feelings and fluff, these are the ones that will come in and they'll just paint you an amazing picture and be like, oh, your home, it'll be like being in a spa every day, it'll clean itself, you won't have to do anything. It'll be like angels carry you upstairs and put you to bed at night. You know, then the last way is price. And this is most of the time get what you pay for. Overall, across the industry, everybody comes pretty darn close together. In national surveys and all the studies that have been done, most contractors are hitting within a percent or two of one another when it all comes down. So if you have somebody that's really that far under, that should be like red flags, sirens, lights, everything going off in your head. And you really want to investigate further. The problems, it gets confusing. There's too many things to worry about. You're not sure what you want at that point. There's too many options contradicting one another. And this would be if you get a lot of contractors into the ring and you have them all come in and say, well, what would you do here? Well, if you get 10 contractors, you come in and say, where would you move that door to? 7 of them are going to tell you different spaces. you might get three that agree. You begin to not trust anyone. Because one guy will come in and say, well, we do it like this. And then the next guy comes in and goes, I would never do it like that. And so you start wondering, okay, which one of them is the idiot? And then you become really discouraged before you even start. We run into this frequently when I get into people's homes, and they've done a lot of, several contractors have been against one another, and they just don't even know where to go. So the right way would be to set a budget. You need to know how much you're willing to spend. If you have $20,000 for your master bathroom, and you come in and you describe a $120,000 bathroom to somebody, you're going to be really surprised when you get that bill. You need to know what you're able to spend. Be realistic. Just because some guy on HGTV says that the kitchen only costs you $5,000, you're not getting those cabinets donated for free by the producers that have strong-armed the cabinet company to give them to you. Have an idea. You need to at least know what you like and what you don't like. This is really important. A lot of people come in and go, well, you're the professional. What do you think? Well, I don't know. You have a purple shirt on today. Do you like purple? You know, you need to know exactly what you want. Or not even exactly. Just have an idea of what you want. If you know that you don't like bathtubs, then you need to be able to come in and say, I don't like bathtubs. If you take a bath every single day, you need to say, I take a bath every single day. And those kind of things will drive to it. It's hard to stick to a budget when you don't know what you want. This really causes overages and overruns. You need to ask around. Ask your friends, your families, your neighbors, your dentist, your mechanic, the guy that you sit next to, your kids, your grandkids, soccer team. Ask around. Just put feelers out there. You don't have to call all the contractors, but just say, who do you know? If you're in line somewhere and somebody has a hat on that looks like a contractor, say, do you do this? Do the research. Google. It's amazing what you'll find on Google. Google the contractor. Google complaints against the name. Google problems with the name. Google any negative phrase that you can think of that would come with a contractor and the name of that company. It's amazing the kinds of things that'll get there. Government websites. See if the license is active and if their insurance can bond or enforce. So it's really easy for a contractor to say, I'm licensed and bonded. That's fantastic. They might not have paid for their license and bonding. This is really important. This is all available through the Labor and Industry website. You can search by license number, you can search by business name, you can search by UBI number, and I think you can search by one other method. So if you have any of those, you can find the information on if their license and insurance is enforced. Even beyond that, insurance is one of those things that a lot of contractors pay month to month. And so if you're worried about it, ask them for a recent statement. Ask them to list you as additional insured. You can get those kind of things from your contractor. You want to talk to whoever referred you about them and ask a lot of questions. And then go to the website, go to Facebook, go to House, whatever they may have. Go to their website. If they don't have a website, that's not a deal breaker, but kind of navigate through why somebody may not have a website today in today's age. It's decision time. Think to yourself, is this the kind of company that we really want to invite in our home? Especially on a remodel. This is really critical because as a remodeler, I will get to know you better than your friends and family. If I'm doing your master bathroom, I will know your daily routines, I know what time you wake up, I'll know what kind of toothpaste you use, because after a few days, you don't care that we're around, and you'll come out, your hair's messed up, bathrobes, and we become part of the family. So you want to make sure that it's somebody that you want in your home, working on your home. The last thing that any homeowner should think when they get home at the end of the day is, hate that guy. And that unfortunately happens more often than it should, and you can alleviate a lot of that by doing the research on the front end. Make the calls. Now, if you like them on paper and on their website, see if you like the sound of their voice. If somebody answers the phone, yeah. And you go, do you do remodels? Yeah, what do you want? If your gut just kind of like shrivels up, you're like, never mind. You want somebody that's going to have etiquette across the board. Evaluate the conversation on the phone. Set an appointment to look at your project, what you want to have done, and then ask for references. This is critical that you have to call the references. If you just ask for references, it does you no good. Follow up, call those people, and call them and call them until you get back to them. It's amazing. People will give you honest answers when the builder's not in the room with them. This is huge. What do you call the references? Ask them what was done in your home. How long did it take? Are you happy with the results? What did your friends think and say? Would you or have you recommend this builder again? Are you still in touch with them? This is huge. How did they handle problems? This is critical to ask. How were problems handled? Because any contractor that tells you that their jobs are flawless and don't have problems, they're lying. It's just flat out. What were the change orders and why? Most projects have change orders. But projects, if there's a change order, I love when I get a phone call. I know this is gonna cost more, but, because that means I've done my job, they know that they're going beyond that. You never wanna come in and be like, oh, you wanted six? We didn't figure six. Those kind of things you wanna make sure you avoid. And then would you hire them again? That's a huge one. The appointment, you need to be prepared. Have a written scope of work. You wanna have examples of what you like, and you wanna have a budget. You wanna evaluate the conversation and interview them. Ask them questions, ask them about themselves. Ask them about their family, ask them, interview like you were at, like a first date. And you really wanna get to know the contractor and who they are. You wanna listen to their opinions and recommendations and see if they understand what you're looking for. So if you come in and say, I wanna make sure that I have an accessible, barrier-free shower. And they go, you know what is the coolest thing in the world? Those walk-in tubs. They didn't get what you just said, right? If you want to take a shower and roll into your shower, you don't want to have to transfer into a tub just because it's a walk-in. Listen to what they're evaluating, listen to what they're recommending, and go from there. See the work. Pictures work for small jobs, but if you're going to do anything big, you really, really, really want to go and put your hands on what they've got. Because you can skew a lot through pictures. Small stuff is harder to hide. But if it's a big project, the whole house remodel, you can set an angle where it's looking good. Have a critical eye. You want to look for what's wrong. I've become somewhat of a pessimist over the last couple of years in the construction world. And I always am looking for a reason why not to buy the property, why not to buy the house, or why not to hire somebody. And if you can't find a reason, then that's great. You don't have to be like, I'm going to get you, but just look for what's wrong. Get the bid. Building is expensive, remodeling is expensive, so be ready. It's probably going to be more than you thought it was going to be if you didn't have that budget set and conversation before. Remember, the contractor's doing it right, have a lot of expenses, and then we also need to feed our families too. So it can get expensive, so that's where it's important to have a good conversation. Allow the contractor to reverse engineer the job. If you only have $50,000 to do a kitchen remodel, you might be able to come in and say, well, this granite that you picked, that is super cool, has a counterpart that'll save us $6,000 if we use this. Or this appliance that is just amazing looking, we can step down to the pro series of the consumer grade and accomplish a similar look for less money. Work from what the budget is to get as much as you can. So if you start from a budget, it's easier to build up than it is to knock out. And then be willing to give and take on different items. I force my clients to do a priorities list where I call them the must-haves, the want-to-haves, the would-like-to-haves, the I saw it on TV, and a friend of a friend told me that he saw this in a house one time and it sounded kind of cool. If you do that, you're able to kick things off real quick. Then you want to hire them. Once you believe that you have a good fit and the prices are where you want to be, get the ball rolling. Realize that things will go wrong. Something will go wrong. That countertop's going to show up, and the seam's going to show up more than you wanted it to, and you're going to say, tear it out. That's a hard example that I'm dealing with right now. But you have to deal with it. You pull it out, redo it. Tile maybe backordered, or somebody in a warehouse in Canada compiled a box of the wrong color tile. That happened. But most of all, enjoy the process. It's not going to last forever, even though you kind of get into it and you feel like, oh, what am I going to get my home back? It's not going to last forever, and 4 or 5 months after you're done, you'll never think about it again. So thank you guys so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Okay, thank you.
prior and in general.
Well, thank you first. Does Donna live here in Vancouver?
Donna lives in Gresham.
In Gresham?
She does.
Okay, cool. All right. Parade of Homes?
Yes.
Parade of
Homes.
Homes, okay. Are some of what you're talking about things that are shown in the parade themselves, you know, products, ideas related to universal design, accessibility, those kinds of things?
Not really. This year's parade, I had the opportunity to go through last Thursday, where the beautiful homes, open flowing floor plans, then they function with main floor masters and bathrooms, some barrier-free showers, but outside of that, not so much. There's a lot of barriers to entries in and out of the homes. Some of them are far more accessible than others. So there is some, but it doesn't appear that there was any real focused intent on getting that universal design and the accessible feel of the home.
So next year we will work on that, right?
I am trying to get on there.
Okay. Did we get that on camera?
Yeah, okay. The accessible parade of homes, 2017.
The accessible parade of homes. You know, and I think that your presentation, as far as kind of going through things to go and look at, the remodel thing is always really, really tough. But for me, and I think you and I differ in this opinion, in this whole thing, is the whole thing as far as codes are concerned. And I believe that we can go, that we can set some codes that will that will be very easy and cost effective all the way around. I mean, it won't add a lot to the bottom line, so to speak. You know, I believe that we can go and do that in the long run and everything. And so I want to work with you a little bit down the line with that. So, but I come from way back when if it hadn't been for the Americans with Disabilities Act coming out 20 years ago, we still wouldn't have anything going on for persons with disabilities. You know, it was the law that ended up making a difference. And so I tend to believe, you know, and I've been working on educating for a long time. And that's what the CAPS program is about, over on for rebuilders and modelers like yourself and everything, builders. But still, that doesn't get us to where we need to be. And you agree with that, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that and there's a huge, huge difference out there. And especially with rebuilders, and even contractors, builders, when you're saying, okay, this is what I want, and they go, and say, well, geez, you know, that's going to cost you an arm and a leg to go and add on to it, when in reality, many, many times, that isn't the case at all. You know, but anyway, I think that's where codes can come in to play to help us with that a little bit also. You know, that's kind of where I come from. But the whole thing with the CAPS program is that has to be a lot more, that has to be a more technical design program and not so much of an educational sales program. Mm-hmm. This is how I sell my being a CAPS person.
Correct.
You know, yep. And that's really what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're throwing a little bit of accessibility into it and everything. So anyway, that's my comments and everything, and so we can go from there.
Did you have any comment on that, Aaron?
You know, I just want to kind of readdress one of the reasons that I'm opposed to code. Like I said, I spent all morning talking about affordable housing, and the addition of $833 to a home equates to a $1,000 price in the home. And for every $1,000 increase in the Portland metro area, there's now just under 1,200 households that can no longer afford that home. And so it's a very complex issue. The other problem with codes is that they're not always enforced in a manner that is appropriate or interpreted in a manner in which they were meant to be. And so you can have a building department or an inspector kind of go rogue. And really, it has some costly effects overall. So it's more of the slippery slope issue than it is the disagreement with Chuck's stance on wanting to make sure that people have accessibility in their homes.
But you did say that you were in favor of the ADA regulation, American for Disabilities.
I am. I think that the ADA is a great one. It really addresses public spaces. It's what made public spaces accessible to everybody. You know, businesses and things like that were within the residential market. You know, I feel like people should be able to kind of design their home the way that they would want, whether it's detrimental to them in the future or not. You need to be able to make that decision.
Bill?
Yeah, I had a question, Aaron. First of all, thank you so much for being so well prepared. Just very helpful.
Very good.
I liked your very orderly presentation, and thanks. The challenge that I see is the whole idea, if you wait until the so-called market drives it, where does that really start? Because it seems to me it's kind of a push-pull thing here. You don't find accessible houses being built in new home construction. They just aren't. And so who starts the ball rolling here? And yeah, you'll find a one-off here with a consumer saying, please do this, please do that. But that isn't what they see, and that isn't what they find. Trust me, I don't have any answer to what I'm even saying right now. I get the quagmire thing that we're in. That when you're trying to, if you intensify the density of housing in a city or whatever, then you're getting smaller and smaller and smaller lots. The smaller lots you have, the less possible it is to do a single story home. And if I were a builder and I bought a lot and I could put a 1,500 square foot single story on it or stack it and have a 3,000 foot on the same thing, I'm going to build that 3,000 foot home all day long. It's not even going to be a question for me. And so how in the world as you age, you don't want that 3,000 foot two story home. And yet go out here in the community, you can't find the 1,500 to 2,000 one story homes. They just don't exist. And so how in the world to blend those things, to me, is a tremendous trick. And part of that has to be put on the builders to begin to push, saying, look, we need this in our community. We need to set this pace. If I were a builder right now in Battleground, for instance, Battleground has the best tight density of every one of the medical services, Vancouver Clinic, Kaiser, Legacy. I mean, they're all within probably a mile and a half each other. Fred Meyer's, Walmart, Safeway, Albertsons, they're all right there. Theater, restaurants, boom. There should be a community close by there where you would have the kind of housing where you could walk there if you wanted to. We don't do that.
Yeah, it's really a complex issue.
It is.
I wish I could tell you. Hey, let me make a phone call right now if you guys want to do it. Unless you're trying to be a tree, it's going to be
really. That's all I'm saying is please work with us on this.
Yeah.
Because as a county, we desperately need this. The thing that AARP is doing next month is on the missing middle. And how we used to have neighborhood single family houses, courtyards, apartments, mm-hmm. and so forth. Did you see that thing in the paper this morning, was it? About the guy who was building the ADUs in Vancouver And an excellent article,
yeah,
on building that second small home in a lot.
Yeah, the you know, that's a another topic as well. The ADUs are allowed in the city of Vancouver. You can't do them in rural areas. Otherwise, we'd be doing a lot more of those, I'm sure.
We're working on that.
We're all pushing together. There's just some really complex issues that go with it. Personally, I don't know why people aren't ramping into homes. I just remodeled a 1930s farm home that by no means is accessible. But one of the things that I did do is I poured a concrete ramp up to my back patio. It's not ADA compliant. It's just slightly outside of what the code compliance is, which is a 1-8 ratio. Part of the problem is that the code is written almost too stringent, where a 1-8 slope allows you to roll yourself up, but you might not be able to get that in there. You may not have the space to be able to do that. And so there needs to be some flexibility for the interpretation of the rules.
Well, what is the deal? We had somebody present to us, wasn't it just this last year, that we have some code somewhere that makes it difficult for people to put in those chairs that go up the... because of some elevator code or something.
State regulation.
Do you remember what that is?
Yeah, they're state regulated. They're like an elevator now, and just because of the safety mechanisms that are built into them now, then, of shutting off and all of those kinds of things. They're instead of being a lift, they're moving into being an elevator. So then when they move into being classified as an elevator, then all of the elevator regulations come into it, costs go up.
And that's Aaron's point.
I get it.
The state, the code loves to adopt things. The Green Building Code, the National Green Build Council, really when they started, their intent was to be an elective issue. They wanted their gold, silver, bronze to be something that people could elect to go and do. The state of Washington now, if you build a new home in the state of Washington, you're just a few pieces of paper away from a certified bronze. And it's been pushed into code. It's not always a bad thing. The houses perform well, but it's driven the costs in a manner that they're not as affordable. So people like to hijack something good and take it to that next step. And all it takes is one person to fall off a lift, and suddenly they're no longer safe. It needs to be regulated, and we need to cover them like elevators. All it takes is one person to roll down a ramp too far and roll into a rose bush, and suddenly everyone's waving their hands, and we now need to regulate this, and you got to have rails, and you have to have safety monitors, and your grandkids have to come by with flags, and
down the rabbit hole.
So the answer to Bill's question, will you please work with us, was yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Herb, did you have a question?
Actually, it's been covered.
Mary, you have a question?
Yeah, actually, both Chuck and Bill raised more questions for me.
That's what we do.
Building off what Bill was saying, this morning, I have a friend that I hike trails with, and we were out, and she said, because of course she has to hear about the commission all the time and our work. She said, I saw a sign for ranch homes being built. I said, oh, I need to know where that is. So I went out to the site, and of course I had to get out and walk around because they were under construction. I wanted to see what was being done. And even the builder and designer showed up, so I was able to walk through with him. Of course, I walked up to the first house and saw the steps up to the front door, so I thought, well, that's not going to work, and went into the bathroom and just wasn't enough room in there. And so I talked to him and let him know what great opportunities there were to start designing homes and how important it was.
Yeah.
I said, are you going to have a lip going into the shower? Because that's a deal breaker. You need to start looking at doing that. So it was very interesting. But one of the things he said, and I want to ask Aaron about this, is that, well, yeah, I get it, but it's too far along now. And I mean, it to me looks like it just started, but he says you have to plan that well in advance So I want to find out from Karen, when we talk about the backing for grab bars, which are so important to have that reinforcement behind there, and you mentioned that you put them in all your jobs. So what percentage of new home construction has that backing, do you think, just an estimate?
Of new construction?
Well, like Parade of Homes, do they have the backing?
The Parade of Homes houses are of caliber that they may.
Sorry?
The Parade of Homes are of caliber that they may have backing in them. They might. Your state production houses are probably zero. Mm-hmm. There are very, very few.
And what would be the increase cost? And can you just basically say what happens when you put the backing behind the board? Is it plywood or is it?
You can use any number of products. We usually use wear scrap, so stuff that would be thrown away.
There's a good opportunity.
That's generally where what we use. It's for all the backing, drywall backing, grab bar backing, hand bar backing.
Excellent. That would certainly be something that would be an easy fix if that could be talked about a lot, about get that scrap and put it in for backing as a selling feature. Also, you talked a little bit about recessed floors for roll-in showers. Can that be done after construction? If you were going to do a remodel, can you cut out the floor, recess it, or no?
We typically, if it's a main floor bathroom, don't have a problem with it because we can get to the crawl space, we can re-support, re-engineer. Mm-hmm. If it's a second floor, especially with the modern day floor systems, you then have to go to an engineered system that actually replaces the subfloor. So I know that I think Weedy, Schluter, a couple of the tile backer products do have subfloor replacements that are an inch to an inch and a quarter thick that will create that drain. So it's doable, but they get more expensive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so if you have a new home, conceivably it could have backing in the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. How do you know? How do you find out? Other than call the builder, which is what I did. So,
I would probably assume that there's not. That would be kind of my first course of action is just assume that it's not there, and then you're going to need to go through another means to secure grab bars.
And that would be, obviously there's no scrap lumber lying around my house.
Correct. So they do make wall anchors that are about $15 a piece.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
They make wall anchors that are made for retrofit grab bars. I believe their capacity is something 250, 300 pounds. They're a really beefy wall anchor. You drill an inch to an inch and a quarter hole. It goes through, and then it's got like 10 kind of barbed things on the opposite side that spread out and grab it so that you reduce the stress on the drywall and you distribute it over a larger space. So that's, you know, that's the best option. The other option would be to get grab bars that would hit studs and locate the framing members and put them in there.
But probably the best option is just to use the scrap lumber during construction and advertise it as grab bar ready.
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
I think you're negotiating. Did you have a question, Don?
Yes. I met piggybacking on that, Bill was saying, what is it going to take for us to get the whole Clark County Building Industry Association to make affordable housing for middle-class people that are seniors who have these aspects that you're talking about? I mean, I understand you said it's about money, but you know, what do we need to corral every senior in Clark County and attack the building industry? I mean, there's how can we influence them? What is it going to take?
Well, we're in the right room for some good things to start. The growth management
is right along.
There's a couple of county issues that are really going to need to be resolved to help, that really spur on a lot of expense. It's a whole other side conversation that I'd be happy to have with you. But as far as the industry right now, even though it's thriving, most builders are kind of in a survival mode, just trying to keep up with regulations that have been imposed over the last couple of months, a lot of them.
Joe, did you have another question? Or did you have another follow-up?
Well, I just wanted a little follow-up. Definitely, Aaron, we definitely want to partner with BIA and with moving forward with making, educating definitely a lot more. I would have loved to have all of the rebuilders and builders in the audience here and everything, but definitely we are very, very interested in partnering with BIA and starting that whole conversation, because it is a tremendously complex discussion that has to go happen all the way from law, codes, down to the person that's actually getting what they would like to go and have, and everything. So definitely, yeah, we definitely want to do that. So, thank you.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up?
Well, I want to reiterate, it would be nice if the builders would build homes so that we don't have to be forced into custom designs, because I know we're looking, many, many of my friends are looking, and we can't find any place to move. We want to downsize, and there's nothing available that's small, that's accessible for seniors. Some of the issues you were talking about, but you were talking about custom design, and we just like to be able to move into something without having to go through all of that.
The difficulty, especially with small now, is just the price point and the appraisals for the areas. It's very hard for a production builder to build a small home that appraises at the value that we have to sell it at. And so that's why houses are getting bigger and bigger. It's not the greed of the builders, it's more the factors of the fact the development cost and everything else is as so high that you can't, the house won't appraise. So a 1,200 square foot house that's $250,000 is not going to appraise in this market. So that's, again, it's a very complex problem. I do a ton of work in Fairway Village, which is one of the most poorly designed 55 plus communities around. But in there, you get your movement of where people, that barrier-free, the accessibility of the home is really coming into play. And you're seeing that through that community and the grassroots movement that's going on in there. Is really kind of indicative of what I think could happen across the rest of the county. Mm-hmm.
So we decrease regulations and then you meet the market demand.
Marjorie.
What's the issue with senior condominiums? I mean, cost-wise, you're probably going to be more efficient with shared wall community structures. It should be fairly profitable.
I'm truly not in that facet of the market. I don't see why there wouldn't be something that's desirable. I don't think there would. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't work.
It just hasn't happened yet.
It just hasn't happened. Yeah, I can't answer for some of my colleagues.
Any other questions up here?
Well, no. We found a couple little houses that were adorable on a huge lawn. We don't want lawn work. So I just don't think the needs of seniors are being taken into account enough by builders.
I can guarantee you that the senior community is talked about often within the realms of the builders. The National Association of Builders comes out frequently with articles on senior needs, how to market to seniors. It's definitely a driving force. You guys are probably the biggest driving force in the market overall. We're very aware of your needs.
We also control 73% of discretionary income.
We're very aware of that. So it's out there. It just doesn't seem to be coming to the forefront as quickly as people may like.
Okay.
You brought it, Aaron. Thanks.
This opportunity for you to have questions. You have the audience.
I think a television show. Remodeling, disabled, upgrading.
Wait, pull that over your microphone here.
a television show that's so popular now, remodeling shows, you just get some contract to have a show specialized and make it a popular show and lots of great fortitude, so it's the most popular show as soon as it airs, and it'll stay that way forever. And maybe we can produce some of the other type of remodeling shows.
That is a fabulous idea.
So.
One of the things that, and the reason why I asked Aaron about Donna is because I'm thinking about a kind of a show of accessible homes in Clark County, and so you could go around to these different ones. Although right now I'm only come up with about four of them that I know about. So we need to have a few more, Aaron. Okay. But good, that's right on.
A question here.
I just have a question about it. This has nothing with the affordable homes. I understand why there aren't affordable homes, because people want bigger and better. And I know we project that we have 73% of the income, but they're just not looking at us. I mean, I hate to tell you this, but they're not. But bonds, how can we be sure that a person that's doing work has a legitimate bond, that it's attached?
The easiest way is to get you some form of documentation from the bonding and insurance company as you start.
Because I had a full driveway put in my house. I came from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out that he didn't pay after the concrete had been laid and started to buckle because he didn't put enough roofs and had enough space for it to expand.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to the insurance company, they told me that his policy had lapsed, so I was SOL.
So it lapsed after you poured?
Yeah.
See, and the way that I understood it is that it's enforced at the time of the work being done. I could be completely wrong. Insurance companies have a way of weaseling out of stuff. But it's supposed to be.
And this was important. So you know, I went through the whole, I called the insurance company, called the building code, they said that he had lapsed, his insurance had lapsed, so I was left holding the bag, as to say. And one other thing, how many estimates do you think you should get if you're?
I don't think you should get more than one estimate. I think that you should do four or five interviews.
Well, that's what I mean. How many?
It's up to you. You know, if the first guy that you call, you really like him on the phone, and you are impressed with their work, and you've done the reference checks, and they have become highly recommended, you may only need one. If you're kind of cold calling, if you're just going to go online, you go to Google remodelers or builders or whatever it may be, take four or five, call them on the phone, kind of weed it out over the phone to maybe two or three, and then invite them in for more of an interview base. And then from there you can go forward with the design and final pricing.
Yeah, because I had my house all resided, and I had these two guys were just excellent. I mean, they just were bending over backwards. But they never showed up when they were supposed to. They didn't start, but I wanted to talk more with them, and it was like ongoing, we'll be there, and I finally went with another company. Same pricing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing next time I'll know.
Sure.
To get, at least three people that will come in and sit down with me and talk with me, because I want to do my kitchen.
Sure. It depends on what it is as well. Roofing, siding, windows, those are a little more generic. It's a little more like buying a car. Because there's not many moving pieces to it. You know, what are you going to use behind the siding? What kind of siding are you going to use? How are you going to put it on?
Well, when they put it on, they forgot to put the green metal mortar. They started out not putting that down, even though it was in the contract. I made them remove everything and start all over again.
Sure. So
they were not happy with me. But, I'm paying for it. So, okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Marjorie, I'd like to respond a little bit here because my insurance background. But when you're dealing with contractors, it is important that you do your homework. You get a copy of an insurance certificate, doesn't mean a thing, because they can photocopy those all day long. He mentioned the additional insured endorsement. That's a good one, especially because they have effective dates. If you ever have any question about a bond or an insurance certificate, call the agent. If he lies to you, it's his E&O, you got him. And you will be reimbursed after a certain amount of law issues. But you do have to do your research. You get a copy of that thing, you look at who the agent is, you call the agent and says, is that still effective? If he says no, if he says yes and it's not, you got him.
I did call Portland, and they said it was good.
Portland who?
Portland building people.
No, I said call the agent.
Oh, no, I called the agent afterwards.
Yeah, that's when you found out it was expired, didn't you?
Yeah, and I even wrote out there to get him a couple of times, but he wasn't answering the door.
And there are some other issues, especially when it comes to workers' compensation. If the contractor doesn't have workers' compensation and one of those employees gets injured, you're on the spot.
Yeah.
So it's another aspect. When you go to the online government web pages, you can find out if they've got stuff that's valid. And like I said, call the agent. That's going to be your best bet.
So, Aaron, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sorry, that's one more question.
You find that word in back open, I mean, overlooked. But what if the contractor doesn't abide by his contract? Then what happens? You know, as older people, we can't, you said, have a critical eye and look for what is wrong. How do I get up on my roof and see if he's doing a good job?
Well, that's where it really comes down to references. You need to make sure there's a contractor that's been doing it right for a lot of different people. You know, there's shady guys out there.
Right, right.
There's some warning signs that throw up pretty quick. It generally starts with the low bid. The second part is they don't always completely follow through with what they told you to do, that they do on the front end.
So is this a breach of contract?
What's that?
When he doesn't follow through with his contract.
It is a breach of contract if he doesn't follow through with the contract.
Thank you.
Hey. If he has a breach of contract, what's your recourse? I was just asking if he breaches the contract, what recourse do you have?
Well, when you can prove that they breached the contract, that they've done something that is not appropriate, there's several different avenues. Most contracts have either mediation or arbitration clauses, or you've got the option of small claims court if it's a smaller job, or a full suit. On the consumer side, the states tend to side with the consumer more than the contractor, and so you have a little bit going for you there as well. The biggest part is just really do your homework on the front end. There's a lot of really, really good contractors in the county, but there's some pretty bad ones out there as well.
Okay. We have one other piece of business, and it is a question about do we want to keep track of our volunteer hours on a monthly basis and send it in? Anybody else? No.
To what end is it? What happens to that information? Mm-hmm. Who's it of value to?
Why is it collected?
I'm not sure. I think in the beginning there was some thought that at some point maybe there would be reason to use that information in order to ask for a grant or something to quantify that they're, to show, illustrate that volunteers are working on this. But I think that's probably not something we're going to be involved with. I don't know.
Well, I've never been on a commission or board for a municipality that you had to keep track of your hours just because of, you know, we are an advisory board to the county councilors. We aren't really involved in doing anything where we would be writing grants.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the answer is, we know we do not need it. So next month, October 18th, our speaker will be Roy Johnson. He's the Executive Director of Vancouver Housing Authority. He will be discussing challenges of aging in public housing. Thank you.